brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
I think that a lot of coaches saw Travis as, you're going to play spot minutes, you're a tremendous shooter, and that's what we see you like becoming at the next level. And Crean saw him as a professional point guard and a guy that could make everybody else better, that would just raise the level of play in every way, and basically said, I think I can make you a pro. And it was ultimately that vision that really kind of sold Travis on Marquette.
John Wilkham is the author of the new book, No Fear in the Arena, Travis Diener's Unrivaled Leadership and Competitive Drive. The book is an inside look at Travis Diener's rise to basketball stardom from Marquette University to the NBA to the Italian League. John is a former Division I basketball player and teammate of Travis Diener's at Marquette University. John later earned his MBA from Loyola University of Chicago. The co-founder of Playmakers Basketball, John implemented collegiate-level workouts into a basketball camp circuit, an AAU program aimed to provide better opportunities for kids in the Midwest. John also worked with high school and collegiate athletic programs on the importance of proper nutrition and the development of fueling stations to enhance athletic performance. Widely recognized for his basketball passion, you can still find John coaching youth teams and playing pickup games at a local gym. John previously authored the best-selling book Walk on Warrior, which details his basketball journey and the people and stories that made it worthwhile. Hey, Hoopheads, I wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Matt Lewis, head men's basketball coach at University of Wisconsin Oshkosh, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
The first training camp Elite Skill Development and Performance Combine will be held on the campus of Western Reserve Academy, just outside of Cleveland, Ohio, powered by Unleash Potential and the Hoopheads podcast. The camp is designed for boys rising to grades 6 through 9 and will take place June 29th through July 1st, 2023. An emphasis on improving individual skills in the context of a team environment will be the hallmark of the training camp. Mike Klinzing from Head Start Basketball and the Hoopheads podcast and Joe's Decision from Unleashed Potential will serve as the camp directors of this inaugural training camp. Campers can expect 3 days of hard work, intense skill instruction, and learning how to be a great teammate on and off the court at the training camp. Players will participate in 10 elite skill development sessions led by some of the best coaches from across the country. Visit headstartbasketball.com to get registered. Prepare like the pros with the all-new FastDraw and FastScout. FastDraw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off FastDraw and FastScout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improve communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. Take some notes as you listen to this episode with John Wilkham, the author of No Fear in the Arena, Travis Diener's Unrivaled Leadership and Competitive Drive. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here without my co-host Jason Sunkel today, but I am pleased to be joined for a second appearance on the Hoopheads pod. John, welcome. John, welcome back to the Hoopheads pod.
Thanks for having me, Mike. I'm excited to be back.
Excited to have you on. John is the author of two books. His previous work was called Walk on Warrior, the story of his time playing basketball at the Division I level for Marquette University, and he is back with a new book, No Fear in the Arena, Travis Diener's Unrivaled Leadership and Competitive Drive. So we're going to dive into that book in a second. But John, before we start,
just give people a little quick background about yourself and what you've done, and then a little bit about Walk On Warrior, and then we'll dive into the new book.
Yeah, I mean, as you mentioned, I never thought I would be an author, period. And then Walk On Warrior was a 13-year kind of passion project in the making that I thought I would give to my kids eventually, and never really thought it would become a real book. But it was published in 2018, and the reception from that book was just tremendous. And I think the one thing I learned through that whole process was just people want authenticity. They want, you know, stories that, you know, maybe nobody else can tell. And they don't just want a, you know, a regurgitation of facts and stats and wins and losses. And so I guess that was kind of like my MO as a writer when I put that book together. And I never thought I would do it again. But here we are now 4 years later. And you know, I had this idea for the second one probably 2 years ago or so. And there were some bumps in the road, as there always are. But launched the second book, No Fear in the Arena, a couple weeks ago. And just thrilled to have it out there. And I think for the people that listen to this podcast especially, you know, this is a true, it's a basketball book, you know, to its core. And so that's why I love, you know, talking to you and Jason and just being part of this community, because we're all just folks that love the game. And I think that was really the driving force behind writing this book.
All right, let's start here. Easier, harder, or the same to write this one compared to the first one?
So I think it was probably easier just from a process standpoint, because I knew what to expect and kind of the things that needed to be done. But the first book was me writing it about me. So, you know, I kind of had the things that I wanted to share and thought were most important and certainly maybe most entertaining or insightful. This was different. And this started out as I was going to ghostwrite this book for Travis Diener. And for those people who don't know Travis played at Marquette, ironically, with me. He was an All-American point guard. He probably would have been a first-team All-American had he not broken his hand his senior year. And got drafted in the second round by the Orlando Magic. He played in the NBA for 5 seasons. And then he actually decided to move to the island of Sardinia, which is a part of Italy, and play in the Italian league. And then he's most famous probably recently because a couple years ago he hit the game-winning shot in the basketball tournament of the TBT to win $1 million. And so I guess going back to your question, what made this book unique was that I was going to ghostwrite it for Travis and just be him. But we kind of just paused about halfway through and said we would get a lot better information and just maybe better stories and things we wouldn't think of from other people. And so we kind of switched course and we decided to interview probably close to 30 people that just talked to us about Travis. And I talked to folks from Italy. I talked to former coaches and teammates. I even talked to Dwayne Wade, which was pretty cool. And just the things that these guys talked about, there's just so much passion in their voices and energy and enthusiasm. It was really fun for me just to listen to that and then kind of put the whole thing together.
When you guys originally came up with the idea, did the idea originate with you or did it originate with Travis?
So it originated with me. And, you know, most people are going to laugh at this, but I was in my backyard mowing my lawn. And I'm just a weird guy that way, where maybe I just, you know, I think about the stuff and I'm like, you know, what would be cool to maybe do next? And I just thought about Travis. And again, I wanted to do something that was somewhat, it had to be moving to me. Cause if it's not exciting to me, like I have a full-time job, you know, I'm busy during the day. I've got young kids, you know, this is me like burning the midnight oil at, you know, between 10 and midnight every night. And so to put the time in, it had to be something that I really thought was, I guess, just important to me first. And so, that kind of fit criteria number one. And then as I talked to Travis about it and just kind of explained this vision of what this could be, some of the stories that started to come out and some of the things that maybe I didn't know about his career and the fact that he was still, you know, playing professionally at the age of 38, 39 years old, it's pretty amazing. And so I just think that this is a much more unique story than maybe, you know, I maybe even make it out to be. And there's some elements to this that I think you couldn't repeat if you tried. And that's what makes it good, a good book and a good story.
How much did you know about Travis's background before you got into the book? So obviously, once he gets to Marquette and you're around him and you get to know him in that respect, but how much did you know about his childhood and just where he came from and what drove him to be the player that he was?
So Travis and I grew up about 2 hours apart from each other, and he was 2 years older than me. And so when I was a sophomore in high school, there was this thing in the state of Wisconsin. It was called the Wisconsin Basketball Yearbook. And basically, it was a breakdown of every high school team, and this just shows how old we are.
You know, I know. Wouldn't it be fun if those things still existed, like in a book, in book form, instead of having to just try to compile it and have a million subscriptions to online things?
Yeah, absolutely. So you'd get this big, thick book in the mail, and every high school team, every player, there's kind of an outlook, you know, returning guys and their stats from last year. And so I was excited to get it because I get it, and there's a section top, it was like 50 sophomores in the state, and I'm in there. And it's like, that's cool, you know, my picture's in there. But then on the cover is this guy, Travis Diener, as a senior, and people were talking about him being the best player in the state of Wisconsin. And he had kind of, to a lot of people nationally, come out of nowhere. And you had heard these rumblings about this dude exploding for, you know, 40, 50 points a game. And it's like, wait a minute, is that actually right? And this is like pre-internet, pre-videos, you know, even pre-cell phones. So you're like looking at box scores and you're like, man, he played a good team last night and he had 46. And so you start to see this stuff, you see him on the cover. And so long story short is that Travis's team was ranked number one in the biggest schools division in the state. And they were playing the number two team in the state. And my dad and I gets home from work. We drive 2 hours to go to this game. And we get there probably an hour before tip. And there is like not a seat to be found. And we like nuzzle our way into the side of the gym. And ironically, I sit next to this guy who's wearing a black leather jacket. He's got really tan skin. I kind of like do a double take, and it was Marquette's coach, Tom Crean. And so I'm sitting next to Tom Crean. We're just kind of talking, whatever. My dad was a student at Marquette in the 70s and was there when they won the national title, actually, in 1977. So we think it's kind of cool that we're sitting next to Crean to watch this game. And Travis puts on an absolute show. I mean, I think he had like 28 at half, scores 40 in the game. They beat the second best team in the state. It's just this raucous environment. And for 2 hours, we drive home and we just talked about the game. It was like, it's one of the, probably the best performances I'd ever seen in my life, you know, in person up to that point. And so it's just amazing when you think about how, you know, I guess the universe works and the fact that I go play Division II basketball. Eventually I transfer to Marquette. I walk on. I'm sitting in Crean's office. He doesn't remember that we sat together during that game. You know, of course I do. And the same thing would go for, you know, being around Travis every day, where I was like, you know, he was a driver, I guess, behind my own motivation in terms of how good I could be, because I was at an age where I was starting on the varsity as a sophomore. And I was like, wow, this guy is same size as me, really skinny, but it's just an absolute, you know, dynamic force. And he was one of those guys where you go to a lot of high school games today and you see guys with massive potential. They, you know, maybe score 14, 15 a game, 7, 8 rebounds. And you're like, someday they'll be good. This guy was one of the best, like, producing players I'd ever seen play high school basketball in terms of just like actually dominating the game at that level.
After getting a chance to talk to him and really kind of diving into his memories of his career and the things that he was able to do and how he went about doing it, what do you think allowed him to excel at the level he did, considering what most people would think of as being less than athletically gifted, not big, not super fast, not playing above the rim, all the things that when a scout goes to look at players, like you talked about, there's guys that walk in the gym and they just look the part. Obviously, he doesn't look the part of a guy who's going to come in and drop 46 against the number two team in the state. So what do you think it is about him, whether that's from a skill standpoint, from a mental standpoint, from a preparation standpoint? Take that question wherever you want to go with it, but just what sets him apart? What made him able to do what he did?
So this is the kind of, I guess, driving force, maybe the red thread throughout the book, is this guy is an unbelievable competitor. And to this day, you kind of try to dive in and figure out, like, what were the maybe one or two things that made him that way? But I don't ever think it's just like one or two things. I think some people just have a makeup that, for whatever reason, whether it's their, you know, their parents or, you know, their extended family, or maybe some mentors, like at a young age, or things that happen to them, where you're like, why is this guy so competitive from when he was like really, really little? And you know, his dad, when they were in fourth or fifth grade, drove him down to Milwaukee and was basically like, okay, you're good for like the area that you play in, but we're going to go and we're going to play against kids that are faster, bigger, stronger. Now we'll see how you do. And even then, he not only started, you know, lighting these kids up, but he starts talking trash. And it was just, he just had this mentality, almost this like irrational confidence where you're like, who is this guy? And then this was back in 2000, but so we all know he's good in Wisconsin, and, his AAU team goes to the Peach Jam. And back then there was only one AAU circuit, which was Nike. So best players, best teams come together, and this Wisconsin team with no Division I signees, all of a sudden is playing for the championship against an Illinois Warrior team that had, I think it was like 11 Division I signed players. And it's just insane. And these guys just like blew him out. And I talked to somebody that played in that game, and you know, he was just like, who the F is this guy? And he was just killing us. And he did it all the time. I mean, he was doing it not just to us, but like they played Tyson Chandler's, you know, SoCal All-Star team. They played Riverside Church, which is the preeminent like powerhouse in New York City. And they beat all of them. And all of a sudden it's like, maybe this isn't like some fluke performance. This guy's a real deal. And so he came out of that being an unknown prospect. And I think he was like the 40th ranked recruit just with like the snap of the fingers after that tournament.
It's kind of amazing, even in the time when this is happening, just that guys can be completely off the radar, that people don't know who they are. It's a little bit more rare today just because everybody has somebody following. It's probably more likely that guys are overrated now, right? Because there's just so many eyeballs on them and people do this and that. But what did he talk to you when you guys were going through the process in terms of making a decision about where he was going to go to school and how he ended up choosing Marquette? And was it because Marquette was in on him early? Was it just because he wanted to be close to home where people could see him play? Was it because of the tradition of Marquette? Just what was his thought process in terms of ending up with Marquette?
So there's a chapter on this, and it was a really good one because it's exactly like what you just asked me, I asked him. And we kind of went through the schools, and his older cousin was a sophomore at St. Louis and playing for Lorenzo Romar, who had been a point guard in the NBA, was like, hey, come here. The ball's going to be in your hands. He actually showed up to his house, and he went out in the driveway and played with the kids. It's like, how many college coaches would do that? And so there was that. Wisconsin and Utah wanted him bad. Wisconsin kind of got in late, and Utah, it's funny because, you know, I worked for Rick Majerus. So this was another kind of just random coincidence maybe, but, Rick Majerus comes to his house. And when he's leaving, he basically tells him, you're not going to come to Utah. And his whole family's like, why would you say that? And he just says, you know, I can tell you guys are a tight-knit group. I know you're not going to go this far away for college. But I want you to come out and visit and just come and see it. But Rick told Travis even after the visit that he just wanted him to come out, and then he knew he wasn't going there. And so, and then Marquette, you know, Crean was kind of this upstart coach. He had two, I think he was like 500 his first two seasons at Marquette. But, you know, the one thing that, that Crean had maybe more than the other schools was he just had this vision for what that team could be and also for what Travis could be. And I think that a lot of coaches saw Travis as, you know, you're going to play spot minutes. You're a tremendous shooter. And that's what we see you like becoming at the next level. And Crean saw him as a professional point guard and a guy that could make everybody else better, that would just raise the level of play in every way. And basically said, I think I can make you a pro. And it was ultimately that vision that, that really kind of sold Travis on Marquette.
I'm assuming Travis's vision for himself was more along the lines of what Crean was telling him, as opposed to these guys that were telling him, hey, you're going to be potentially a role player and a spot up shooter.
Yeah, I think honestly, Travis said that was the first time he ever even thought about it in terms of like, you right. really think I could do that? You know, and then this sounds silly now, but you know, at the time, Dwayne Wade was sitting out. He was prop 48. So he's already at Marquette, but he didn't play his first year there. And so Crean is basically saying, hey, listen, I've got this guy who's a superstar in the making, and I want to put you next to him, and you two could be the best backcourt in college basketball. And it's like, yeah, okay, sure, you know, sure. But all of a sudden, Travis goes down, plays some pickup games. He's like, again, like kind of the same as what Travis was to a lot of people. It's like, who's this Wade guy? Like, he's really good. And so there was a, it was just interesting because even talking to Wade, you know, Marquette during Travis's sophomore year went to the Final Four. They beat a number one ranked Kentucky team that was on a 26 game winning streak. And, you know, Wade was like, hey, I get the credit and scored a bunch of points and had some amazing dunks and stuff, you know, through the season and through that year. But Travis was really like our leader, and he was the guy that made it all go. And, you know, he ultimately kind of took the level up a notch in everything that we did.
Did you ever talk to him about, I'm curious, just because I think back to my own experience, and you probably experienced this at some point, where you walk into a gym and just because of who you are, what you look like, the size that you are, people have doubts. And whether that's you step into an AAU tournament, or I'm thinking about more like the first day you show up at Marquette, and obviously the players on the team are like, oh, this guy, we got this guy. He's a big time recruit, bringing him in. And then you see him and you're like, I'm not sure what this guy is. Did you ever talking about kind of what his first experience was stepping onto the floor, whether that was specifically at Marquette or maybe just in a pickup or AAU situation?
Yeah. So it was everywhere. You know, it was everywhere he went, people were like, that's Diener. And you know, Wade was hilarious. Cause he's like, hey, listen, we had this like athletic movement going on. We had, you know, three or four guys that signed with him that were all like 6'7" jump, you know, like we had that going on. And then all of a sudden, like we get this guy and it's, he's like, I just laughed. I'm like, he's our top rated recruit. Like, are you kidding me? And then the same thing when Travis went to play in Italy, you know, these guys are like, they were excited to meet him. And they're like, why would a guy that played in the NBA like want to come play here? And I think one of the funniest quotes of the book is, you know, one of their best players in that Italian team said kind of what you said. He's like, he walks in the gym and he's white, he's small, he doesn't jump. Like, how did he play in the NBA for 5 years? And then, you know, after like the first week of practice, he was like, you know,
oh, I get it now.
Yeah. The guy's like, you know, just hitting people where they could score. He never turned the ball over. You know, he never seemed to miss the same shot twice. And it was just, it's fun talking to people about that because, you know, his overall just like basketball and IQ, I think were so probably underrated. Because everywhere he went, he seemed to win at a really high level.
Did his competitiveness spill over into, obviously you hear about the Michael Jordan of, he never is going to lose a ping pong match. He's never going to lose a Monopoly. He's maniacal when it comes to winning. Did you see those things with Travis?
Yeah. So some of these things are probably well documented over the years, but, you know, Travis lived, I think it was a fourth floor apartment. And there were instances when like video game controllers like went out the window and would go crashing onto the sidewalk, you know? He competed in everything. I mean, we played ping pong and I remember him, you know, throwing ping pong balls and paddles and just, and yeah, I mean, he looks back on some of that and was like, was it like the way I should have led? Was I immature? Like, of course I was immature, you know? Do I wish I would have changed some of that? Yes. But it's interesting how we all seem to like follow that. And especially like when we played with him, we were all better because he was around. Like everything we did, it's like, well, shoot, I'm in a shooting drill with this guy and, you know, he just hit 15 threes in a row. Like I better make at least 10 or 11. And so I think just that mentality of winning, competing, making things competitive. I also think that him and Coach Crean were very similar in that regard of even the way our practices were set up. I think we're kind of set up, you know, to play to Travis's strengths in that way. And we were ultimately a better team because of it.
So what did that look like from a practice setting? What are you talking about there?
So everything we did at a winner or loser, we didn't do a lot of like just running for the sake of running, you know, or like, hey, let's go do these ball handling drills and dribble around cones. And we didn't do a lot of that. You know, we did a lot of things where there was a score. We played up to, you know, 5 or 7. There always seemed to be like an outcome. And then, you know, there'd be a quick sprint at the end. If you lost, then we go on to the next thing. So conditioning was really like, was really intertwined into kind of everything that we did. And it was a pretty tight schedule that way. So I feel like for practice hard. Absolutely. They were super hard. And especially if you lost a lot, but, they found a way to really make it about like, you know, I guess just being competitive in everything that we did.
That competitiveness, I think it's hard to turn off. I think especially when you're in the moment, like maybe as you retire, as you age, as you're not playing anymore, you can kind of maybe dial that back to some degree. But I think when you're in the moment, in the midst of your career, I think that's really hard. If you're that competitive of a person, I think it's hard to turn that stuff off. Was there anybody that in the course of doing the book that talked about clashes with Travis because of that competitiveness, times where maybe he rubbed somebody the wrong way because he just couldn't turn that motor off?
Yeah, for sure. And I think that gets really hard when you're playing in the NBA and you're not the man anymore.
Yeah.
You know, I think there's kind of a unwritten rule that if you're getting paid a lot of money and you're the starter, that you kind of are given the right to lead. And everyone kind of falls into place after that. What I think was one of the most maybe just shocking things to me is that, so Travis had played in the NBA for 5 years. I believe he's got a lifelong pension as a result of that. And he had an opportunity to sign another contract for guaranteed money to not only stay in the NBA, but to come home basically and play for the Milwaukee Bucks. So they said, here's the money, third string point guard. I think it was for 2 or 3 seasons. And he basically was like, I don't want to just sign a contract and sit on the bench. And I'm like, what do you mean? And he's like, at that point in my life, like, and I'm not saying this to be arrogant or any of that. It was more important for me to go and play than it was to like collect a bunch of money and like sit on the bench. And so that's what ultimately took him to Italy. And I was kind of just shocked when I heard that, because I thought to myself, how many people would turn down millions of dollars to play for their hometown NBA team and play spot minutes here or there to go and, you know, make a fraction of that on an island in Italy just so that you can like contribute and play every night? I don't think a lot of guys would have done that.
Especially when you're talking about you're giving up the NBA lifestyle. Obviously, you're not making nearly as much money in Italy. Not that you can't make good money there, because especially with the NBA on your resume, you certainly can. But to give all that up is something that I don't think you see very many guys do. But yet, at the same time, as a former player, and I'm sure you can relate to the mentality to some degree, that there's a part of you that says, yeah, sitting on the bench and just watching, sure, it'd be nice to collect $1 million, $2 million, $3 million to just sit. But anybody who's competitive, anybody who's played their whole life, like any of us have, the idea of sitting on the bench is maddening, and not being able to contribute. And especially if you feel like you can contribute, which, look, most of us who have been on teams, you may realize that, hey, I'm not as good as guy X, but there's a part of you deep down that still thinks, hey, I am better than guy X who's playing ahead of me. I don't care what level you're playing at. I think we all think that way. It's kind of how your ego has to be in order to get you wherever, whatever success you have in the game. I think you have to have a belief in yourself in order to do that. So I'm sure that that was what he was thinking, right? Is, hey, I feel like even at the NBA level, I could be a starting point guard. And the fact that I'm not going to get to do it, I don't want to just sit here during years where I could be playing. Look, we all eventually see that our time being able to play the game is limited. So I'm sure that played into it.
United Basketball Plus is your doorway to all things basketball. If you desire to go further, faster as a coach and leader, if you want to maximize your team's potential, or if you simply just want to be a student of basketball, United Basketball Plus is the resource to take you to the next level in your basketball journey. As a member, you will have access to some of the greatest minds in basketball today. The in-depth videos provided by these coaches and basketball experts will help make difficult concepts simple to understand and teach. With your membership, you will have access to video playbooks, sports psychology, fast model playbooks, skill development, speed agility, and various other United Basketball Clinic videos. Your annual membership also includes access to our 2021 United Basketball Clinics, as well as discounts to attend future basketball clinics. The best way to find out all we have to offer is to visit us at unitedbasketballplus.com.
Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies, and most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the portfolio guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your Coaching Portfolio Guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more. When he made that decision, was it something that he immediately felt good about when he got to Italy, or did he talk about maybe having regrets about it? Maybe it took him a little while to kind of get used to what he got himself into.
So this is where this story gets really interesting. And this was, again, a lot of the stuff that I just didn't know. So Travis has a cousin. His name is Drake, who's a Division III basketball coach, in Wisconsin. And Drake and Travis were the same age. So, Drake was a very good high school player. He played at DePaul University in Chicago. And at the end of Drake's senior year, he was getting ready for some NBA workouts and potentially to go to the combine. And no matter what he did, he was just always out of breath. And it was hard to even talk to him about this because, you know, he's like, I would go back to the gym and just like run sprints for an hour after like workouts. And I still just, I never seemed to feel like I was in good shape. So he goes to a couple of these workouts, you know, they're like 5-10 minutes in and he's just winded. And he'd come home and he just basically told himself, like, I'm not good enough to play in the NBA. I'm just not. I don't have it. So he continues to get more and more tired. Eventually he goes in for a kind of a standard medical checkup and they discover that he's got Crohn's disease, which basically means that he was getting like half of the oxygen as a normal person. So Drake loses like 50 pounds and he's in pretty dire condition, to be frank. You know, you're at a point at that point where he's been ill for 18 months, maybe. And, he's just trying to kind of be a normal person again, you know, much less think about playing basketball. And, eventually Drake gets better and he goes to play in Italy in a lower level league. He meets a coach there. His name's Mayo, and they develop this good relationship. Drake starts to get better and better. And eventually Drake is playing in the Italian kind of Serie A league, which is the top league in Italy and one of the best leagues in the world. And so when part of Travis's decision was he had an opportunity to go play for this coach, Mayo. And Drake had told him, listen, this could be the best coach you'll ever play for. His system's perfect for your game. You're going to love playing for this guy. So Travis goes and he plays for him for a year. And then in year two, Drake signs a contract to play there as well. And so not only is Travis playing on this island, but his cousin is there as well. And so these guys as, you know, kind of best childhood friends eventually reunite in Italy. They're two of the top scorers and pretty much leaders in every statistical category. And they lead this small franchise, to be frank, to a title, which was kind of unheard of against some of these bigger clubs. So, it's a pretty remarkable story when you just look at, how these guys were connected. Drake's career was absolutely incredible. I mean, some could argue it was actually better than Travis's. Drake is the all-time leading scorer today in the Italian league. And so it's pretty special that those guys got to play together the way that they did. And obviously got to share, you know, a lot of these memories together for several years.
You talked earlier about his longevity and the fact that he played for such a long period of time overseas and got an opportunity to really extend his career. When you talked to him about that part of it, what did he say about just, again, the drive and what it took to be able to continue to play for that length of time and not get burned out on the game?
So I think it's really hard. I think one of the toughest parts about playing, well, any sport, anywhere, but especially like, you know, international basketball players is, number one, most of these contracts are year long. So there's not a lot of, not a lot of faith and just financial security there. Number two, if you're an American born player and you don't play well, most of those clubs have a pretty quick trigger to replace you. And so, one of the things that both Travis and Drake talked about was, cause I'm like, did you have fun? Did you like the lifestyle? Like, tell me about stuff off the court. And I thought it was fascinating how like serious both of them took the game, of just, you know, we were there to do a job. We were there to be the best that we could. They took it super seriously. And now as kind of older men looking back at that, like, you know, I'm like, do you regret that? Like, do you wish you would have maybe done some more things off the court or traveled more? And both of them are kind of like, no, because we wouldn't have had the careers that we had if we wouldn't have had that mentality. And so I think that that's kind of, just to bring this full circle, what's just so interesting about, you know, things are supposed to be hard sometimes if you want like super ordinary outcomes. And I think those guys both realize that just because we're over here and, you know, like the novelty of playing Italian basketball or, you know, drinking wine in the plaza, like it was still basketball and they still had to train hard and work hard and take care of their bodies and like do the things that they needed to do, especially, you know, in their mid 30s to really play at a high level.
And there's a price for greatness, right? That's what you always hear about, is you can have one or the other. If you want to be great at whatever it is that you choose to do, whether it's basketball or it's something else, that there are sacrifices that you have to make. Greatness a lot of times is lonely. You got to put a lot of time in. You got to sacrifice a lot of things. And there are people who want that. And then there are people who maybe don't want it the same. And so you don't get that same level of achievement when you don't put in the time and make some sacrifices. And it sounds obviously like throughout his career that he was willing to make those sacrifices for the game of basketball. What about the transition from playing into quote unquote normal life? What's that been like for a guy who's as competitive and basketball has been so important to him throughout his life? Did you talk to him at all about that transition?
Yeah. So Travis turns 41 in March. And him and a buddy opened a sports complex outside of Milwaukee. It's called The Facility. And there's three basketball courts there. There's like a small indoor turf soccer field. There's a sports performance kind of lab. It's a pretty amazing facility. And so that's, you know, ultimately like where he's putting his time and energy now. And but I think one of the just like the great ironies of a lot of this is that, you know, I'm like, well, how do you spend your days? Like, are you doing a lot of like, you know, you're running a pretty big business and, you know, I'm sure there's a lot that goes into that. And yet when you talk to people about him, they're like, no, he's never like behind his desk. Like he's, he's out playing. He'll literally be out, you know, playing one-on-one with random kids. He's playing 5-on-5 with people, all the time. So I think it's a testament just to who he is as a person. There's not a lot of people that I think like me, you, everyone listening to this, like we love basketball, you know, but how many of us love to like play basketball as we get older and still play daily? Probably not a lot of us. So I think it's pretty cool that he still plays every day and they have, you know, he's got buddies that come in and they play pretty high level pickup, you know, in the morning sometimes, and younger kids that play in the afternoons, he jumps in there. So he's a basketball player really to his core, which I think is pretty fascinating.
Yeah. That's one of those things that again, I think about that and I retired now, it's been like 10 years since I tore my ACL. And that was my last foray. I guess I played one time at a Kent alumni game. And my goal was to score, John. And my goal was to not go to the hospital. And I accomplished both of those. That was like 3 or 4 years ago. But yeah, I'm jealous when I hear about guys that are still playing. Just life intrudes at some point, right? And basketball, kind of as important as it is to me or to you, at some point, it kind of takes a back seat. And whenever I hear about guys that, you know, continue to be able to play, and, you know, there are obviously some that I know from my former life as a basketball player that are still playing. And it's just, I look at it, I'm like, man, someday I'd like to get back and be able to do that. I don't think my days are probably done, but it's good to hear that there are guys out there that are still getting it done as they get older and still out there on the court. Cause that's why we all fell in love with the game back when we were little kids. That's ultimately what it's all about. When you think about the whole process of doing the book, who was your favorite person to interview, and then who gave you the most insights? I don't know if that's the same person, two different people, but who'd you most enjoy talking to, and then who gave you the most insight?
So I think I probably enjoyed talking to Dwayne Wade just because of the name and who he is. And funny story on that is Travis was like, Dwayne's going to call you tomorrow. And I'm like, okay, so like what time? And he's like, I have no idea. Just going to call you. And I'm thinking, I've got a real job and I'm on Zoom calls, and you know, if my phone's ringing, and you know, I might just have to say, hey, listen, Dwayne Wade's calling me. I got to go. See ya. But I have this break in the afternoon and I get a text message and it just simply says, hey, John, this is the best basketball player Travis Diener has ever played with. And I'm like, okay. So I'm like, are you around? You want to chat right now? And then my phone rings, and it's him calling. So that was pretty fun. I also think some of the stuff in Italy was fascinating to me, because there's elements of European basketball that, you know, none of us really like understand unless you kind of live that. And one of the just amazing stories of the book is they're playing in Belgrade, Serbia against a really good team. And there's several former NBA players that are on this Serbian roster. And right before halftime, Travis's team kind of makes this run and they tie the game. And that horn goes off and the fans just start throwing anything that they can find onto the court. So it's just like, you hear stories about this in some of these countries where, like, and you're almost, as an opposing player, you're like running to the tunnel just so you don't get, you know, blasted in the face with something. So his teammates are like running towards the exit. And some of these guys are like, you know, I'm like scared for my life, you know? And then the one guy, I won't say his name, but he's like, I'm standing in the tunnel just watching this stuff rain down from the stands. And Travis is still like at half court, like yelling at the fans. And he's like, I just stood there and was like, this guy is just a different animal. It's just a different competitive spirit. Like, you know, every guy on our team is like just in fear of what's going on. He's like just in the moment, you know? And I thought that kind of summed up just his career in kind of a weird way of like the tougher things got, like the more hostile it was, he seemed to just like go to a place where that just like brought out the best in him.
I have a visual of that in my head. I have no idea if it's accurate or not, but you telling that story definitely gives me a visual of him standing at half court yelling. I don't think I'll be able to unsee that visual, even though it may be completely inaccurate. Yeah. You painted a very good picture. Let people know where they can get the book. Tell them again the title, where they can find it, and then I'll jump back in after that and wrap things up.
So the book is No Fear in the Arena, and it's available on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com and hopefully some more places soon. But if you're a basketball fan, and again, you know, whether you know who Travis is or don't know, I think there's just elements of the story that I think most people are going to really find fascinating, because it really is unique in a lot of ways. And there was just quite a bit of effort that went into getting so many unique perspectives that that made it, a story that I just don't think anyone else could tell. So I think people really enjoy checking it out.
Please go and check out the book, No Fear in the Arena by John Wilkham. And if you get a chance to check out his previous work in Walk On Warrior, you will enjoy that book as well. Both of them are extremely well done. Both of them are great reads. If you are a basketball player, fan, coach, you will enjoy the behind the scenes look at college basketball, professional basketball, the inside story behind what it takes to be a basketball player at this level that we're talking about, both with Travis and in John's previous book, to play at the Division I level as a college player. John, cannot thank you enough for taking the time out of your schedule this afternoon to join us. Really appreciate it. And to everyone out there, thanks for listening, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.